Hi, this is Gisela Newbegin interviewing John Inglesby at the DeForest Area Public Library in DeForest, Wisconsin on Thursday, July 30th, 2009. I'd like to welcome you, John, and thank you for your time again today.
My pleasure.
And one of the reasons I asked you to do this interview with me is not only for my class project, which thank you for that too, but also you've been a longtime resident of the DeForest area and involved with many activities, and I myself thought it would be very interesting to interview you and see what other things you might be able to tell me about yourself. So, like I said, I understand that, you know, long-time resident, and I understand Morrisonville is your hometown. And so then I'd like to just have you let me know or explain to me what it was like growing up in the area then, and what the town was like and how it's changed.
Sure. Well, I was born in the little burg of Morrisonville, named after James Morrison, who settled it way back at the time that the railroad came through. My grandfather lived in a farm in the rural area, and then built a home in 1910 in Morrisonville. So that's how we were located there. My mother was brought up there. And I was born in 1942. And at that time, my father was principal of a DeForest High School. My mother had been a rural school teacher. And then I attended the Morrisonville Graded School, which happened to be built right next to our home. My grandfather, William Caldwell, was on the school board that designed that building, which is still standing in Morrisonville. So I had a very typical bringing up, I guess. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, which I have come to appreciate much more as I think about that. And it was ideal in many ways because we lived in this home right next to the school, so we did a lot of play on the school ground, including the using the ball diamonds and all of the equipment and the playground equipment, so that was always there. And I also was very handy. In those days, they did have not very fancy hot lunches, but we always went home for lunch, and that's something too that's not too typical in these days. So I went there for 8 grades, and as I think back to that, it was an interesting and I think positive experience. And I've often been asked in college courses, because I turned out to be an educator, elementary teacher, was often asked, how were you taught reading and how were you taught geography? And I have to admit, I really don't remember that very well. We often were talking about reading groups and the advantages and disadvantages of them, and I don't remember much about that. What I remember is all the social stuff and the plays we did at Christmas and the music programs and the picnics and that type of thing. But I do remember graduation, 8th grade graduation. It was a big deal. We had a stage in school, and it was a nice transition to high school. And that was when I began riding the bus to the DeForest High School and attended there 4 years. The DeForest High School takes in all of the rural areas, and Morrisonville was one of them. And in high school, I became actually a much more serious student, more concerned about grades, and studied as I needed to, so I did fairly well there, and also was not particularly social, a little bit of a nerd, I think, in retrospect, but I did play in the band, and was on the local newspaper staff, and the annual staff, and all those good things. And then in 61, graduated and went on to college. My undergraduate work, I spent 1 year in Platteville State. My brother was there at the time in the engineering school. And then transferred actually to the University of Wisconsin for a couple of reasons. One was financial. My father had a stroke and he was no longer earning any money. My mother was at home then taking care of him. So it helped for me to pay my tuition and all those needed book fees to stay at home and to be helpful there. So I then got my BS degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in 1964 in elementary education, And I had done my practice teaching actually in the Sun Prairie in Northside School. And it turned out that my first job in education was at Northside School in Sun Prairie. And then I ended up being in Sun Prairie for my entire career. I taught about 12 years at Northside at sixth grade level, another the rest of it at Royal Oak School, which was an open concept school. And then my last 2 years were spent in administration, one as an interim curriculum coordinator while they were interviewing and with the prospect of getting a new one. And my last year, I was there to fill in as the school principal at Royal Oaks. So I did end up having administrative experience. And I always say to people, I'm glad I had that experience, but doubly glad that I had decided to be a teacher rather than an administrator. Although I loved working with people in all the different buildings, I discovered that about 80% of what you do in administration is problem solve, and that was fine, but it seemed much of it was negative, with oftentimes with parents and children, school board, and so on. So it was a real good experience for me. And so I guess I went on and on more beyond Morrisonville, but it basically was my school career and then also my career in education. Mm-hmm. Then during the time that I was teaching in Sun Prairie, I got two more degrees, one in 68, a master's degree in educational technology, and then a PhD in 1982 in curriculum and instruction with a minor in educational technology. So my focus was always in curriculum and instruction and in teaching. And so I guess we could probably hit what I did after retirement with another question, perhaps.
Okay. I know Morrisonville has, I'm not sure, has Morrisonville grown or not since back then? I know there's been some transitions with the area.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. We're now talking the library, which is located in DeForest, which is growing extremely rapidly. And it's hard to believe that back in the 1870s, there were three small communities that were built in conjunction with the building of the railroad between Madison and Portage. And it was Windsor, which is south of here, and Little Morrisonville to the north of here. And at that time, they almost tell the story that Morrisonville was actually more thriving. It was a huge town that took in tobacco for the railroad and also other farmers' crops and brought in a lot of goods into that town. So it actually even had a bank and several stores and all of those things like Windsor had. But it didn't take too long for that to change. And it happened in 1895 when the high school was built in this area. Windsor Township High School, they elected to build it in DeForest because DeForest is centralized. And as a result, they say that Windsor and Morrisonville have led a steady decline ever since in population. But they're both very nice kind of small burgs, you know, one tavern town, so to speak. But it's a very nice place to live, that's for sure.
Do you think it was better growing up in Morrisonville at that time, or in the area at that time, versus now?
You know, it's often difficult to quantify it, but probably not better, but extremely different, and certainly perhaps less problematic in terms of some of the problems we deal with nowadays. I know we never locked our doors in church or at home, and I think back and laugh kind of, or at least chuckle, how during the summer we would leave in the morning with our bikes and go all over, picnics in the woods and bike riding around town. We used to play ditch at night. And I can't remember ever thinking of that as a problem, and it wasn't for our parents, you know, as well. And of course, no drug problems or anything like that. So it certainly was more simplistic, I would say. Family values were strong then, and I know that they still are, but I think it's a greater challenge now in the schools as well as in our communities.
Something that just popped in my head was, do you think the building of the interstate so close to the area had an impact?
Well, it probably did. It certainly, I remember my grandfather, actually, who was the son of my, no, actually my uncle, the son of my grandfather, ended up with the family farm. And that actually was cut through by, in Vienna Township, by the interstate. So that has always affected them. And of course, it still affects us here in terms of traffic. And I also think of the way that I come to the library almost every day, is near the interstate, and there's it's where all of the fast food joints are out here, the restaurants. And you know, I can remember back when that was just a horse trail, and now I can barely turn on that intersection in the morning because it's so busy out there. So yeah, and the same thing here in DeForest. You know, 20 years ago, I never would have thought that North Main Street would ever be a traffic problem. Mm-hmm. But right now, when you pull out of Burnside's up there, it's you can hardly get on at, mm-hmm. after 3 o'clock, mm-hmm. you know. So. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in the morning too.
So yeah, definitely some advantages with all the nice stores we have now, but it was a little quieter time back then.
Did you have any special memories of elementary school?
Yeah, that kind of goes back to what I started, I guess, saying in the beginning, and it was all about plays and things we did at recess and special programs that we did, and then we would go home. I remember we had my grandfather's barn. It was a beautiful horse barn, and we used to put on plays out there and play in that barn. And my brother actually had a basketball court in the haymow on the upper level. So a lot of stuff went on in our yard, in our backyard after school, that's for sure. I wish I could say that it was spent studying 2 hours every night, but that came in high school, though. So
with the barn like that, it sounds like fun. Did a lot of the other kids in the area come and join
they
you?
They did, yeah, especially with the basketball thing.
Uh-huh.
My brother was big into basketball, and I think that whole eighth grade basketball team used to come and practice there, because at that time in Morrisonville, there was no official basketball gymnasium. There was a little recreation room, and it had hoops, but they weren't regulation.
Sure.
So the only thing they could do was practice sometimes outside, but mm-hmm. it was a little nicer in the barn. And they used that so much that the floorboards actually, you know, were worn away. So it's,
wow.
It was really something.
Wow. And what about high school? I know you said you turned more serious in high school.
Yeah.
But do you have any special memories?
Yeah, all my memories go back to all, it would be the extracurricular activities. And I enjoyed all my classes and studying and got to know the teachers, many of whom were friends of my parents, so I had to be well behaved, I guess. But I was on the newspaper staff, and that was fun, and the annual staff, and of course, the band was huge. We had a marching band, and every year I went out for elimination contests for, I played the saxophone, and you were allowed to do four things, I remember, every year. So I would always do a solo, a duet, a quartet, and then I also play the piano, so I remember accompanying about 13 people at those. So they were big, huge events.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember our band was quite well known at that time. Our instructor was the famous Elmer McLaughlin, and we were invited to play at, I think it was a national music conference in Chicago, and I still remember that when all of us went down and stayed in that hotel and just drove the people on the telephone nuts, because you know, all night we were calling each other, I remember. So that was great fun, yeah.
And that was a marching band?
That would have been the concert band.
That's
that
the
played
concert
down
band.
There, yeah.
But you were also in a marching band?
Yeah, and that we performed at most of the high school football games, and then always for the 4th of July parade in town here, and then any other occasionally special events.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
But that, as I recall, that was not an option. Nowadays, I know they have a very hard time getting the kids to do that, but back then it was kind of considered part of the requirement, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I bet the uniform was pretty impressive.
Well, it was.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm affiliated now with the DeForest Area Historical Society, so we have quite a collection of clothing. And we have some of the old band instruments, but that's one thing we don't have. We have Elmer McLaughlin's white band uniform, but we don't have any of the purple ones. So maybe someday we'll get that.
Oh, wow. Cool. Did you have any favorite teachers? I know you said your teachers were a lot of friends for your parents, but were
yeah.
there any particular teachers that stood out for
well,
you?
Well, you know, I always think of, and I don't know if it was at the time so much or later, but probably my history teacher was Claire Malvey. She was a friend of our my parents, but I got to know her very well after I was teaching and became active in the local historical society, because she was one of the founders. So I worked with her very closely on that, and then got to know her real well. But she was my history and social studies teacher. So yeah, she was very inspiring. And also Elmer McLaughlin as mm-hmm. the band instructor.
I remember when I moved to town, it was like Claire Mulvey's name popped up so many times. It was like she was like the lady of town.
She was, yeah. And she's also very involved in the local study club, which is a ladies' club that did research and read books and met monthly.
Mm-hmm.
And that club is still going. They just are not quite as strict nowadays. Back there, they actually took attendance, I guess,
mm-hmm.
at their study club meetings. So that's kind of the old school method coming through there.
Wow, that's terrific. And I know we had talked once about that there were bonfires from school at homecoming and maybe some other things.
Yeah, and you know, I don't have as much recollection about that as I wish I did. But there was one. The homecoming was big in those days. I think sometimes they even had homecoming parades and homecoming events at the school and around it the night before, and that bonfire was part of that. But I think it was either in the park or in the field by the school there, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure the local firemen were probably on guard for that.
That's probably why they don't do it anymore.
Right.
And getting back to the changes in the area through the years, what would be like the most, what do you miss most about the area back then versus now?
Yeah, probably just, I guess the size was so much smaller that of course you knew everybody,
mm-hmm.
and it was just a little maybe simpler time. It didn't seem like our life was quite as fast paced,
mm-hmm.
and mine is fast paced probably by my own choice getting involved in so much, but
mm-hmm.
it just seems like we weren't scheduled quite as much,
mm-hmm.
especially as children, I don't think. We didn't do much in terms of any kind of lessons and that type of thing. I always recall when we were youngsters, a lot of the kids were taken to Madison for swimming lessons. We never did that because
mm-hmm.
of the polio scare.
Oh,
it was a
sure.
terrific
sure.
scare back then. And so my folks didn't allow us to do that. But one thing that was fun, our big thing every summer was a family vacation. It was a week's vacation on one of the northern lakes in one of the cabin resorts up there. Sounds pretty simple nowadays compared to what they do. But that was, we always look forward to that, planning it and
mm-hmm.
took all our food along and usually went with another family
mm-hmm.
and then played a lot of cards and swam during the day and did a lot of fishing. And
mm-hmm.
So I have great memories of that. And in fact, it's ironic. Whenever I fill my gas tank for mowing with gas, I always think of that because that's the odor that I associated with my father's motor on the fishing boat. Isn't that funny how that those things kind
it's
of bring that back to mind? But those were great times. We didn't ever go on long trips.
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
part of it, I think, was financial.
Mm-hmm.
But I have great memories and a lot of slides from those days. So.
That's terrific. So you have a nice collection of slides?
I do, except that the thing is nowadays, what does one do with them? Because I had like about, I think 25 of those carousels full of trips that I took
uh-huh,
also
uh-huh.
later, and they take up so much room. So that's one thing I did last winter is took the slides out of the carousels, have them in boxes
mm-hmm,
now at least.
Mm-hmm.
So technology changes so much, doesn't it? That
there's a way to convert them now.
Yeah,
into pictures.
Yeah, I should
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, we've tried that. So, so I had forgotten about the polio scare back then. What was it like for you going through that in a small community?
In regard to the...
The polio.
Oh, the polio
yeah.
thing? Well, I was brought home to... You know, at the time, I don't think I thought too much about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure my parents were much more worried than I ever was. But it was brought home to us because one of my cousins, that same uncle I was talking about, his second daughter had extreme case of polio.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I always remember them telling about how they used to have to wrap her legs in scalding hot cloth, you know, and then, and she still today limps as a result of that. So, but she was fortunate, you know, to not lose all of her mobility, but that
mm-hmm.
was very, very frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they were quarantined, the whole
mm-hmm.
family,
mm-hmm.
completely. So we weren't, but we could obviously see them. I was very young at that time, though, so.
Because I remember a little bit about it,
yeah.
but not much, so.
That's a case where, you know, I'm often asked about, you know, would you rather live in days past? And I probably would be romantic about that because I love history so much, but not in terms of the disease and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
sanitation and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah. With your experience up at the university and at Plantville, did you have, again, any special memories of?
Probably mainly in line of curriculum, because I was not a real social guy. I was pretty serious about it, partly because there weren't a lot of finances there to back me. And then when I switched to the university as a sophomore, I lived at home
mm-hmm.
all the time, so I was not part of a fraternity, nor was I even on campus that much.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was there, I usually was in the Memorial Library studying, so I guess I was a little bit overly serious, perhaps, but that's where I got my 3 degrees, so it worked out in the end.
Mm-hmm. Any special professors that stand out?
One, my major professor, Ann Becker, is the one who kind of pulled me through the whole thing with the dissertation and getting
mm-hmm.
a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And back to the campus, we talked the other time about whether I was around during all the riots in the university, and that I do remember, but I don't think I really identified too much with the real problem, because
mm-hmm.
I was there when Sterling Hall was bombed, and I can remember vaguely some of the tear gas around, but I was never in that group or in that crowd
mm-hmm.
too much, so
mm-hmm.
I read about that now with great interest, but I didn't know at the time that we were making headlines in California. Pretty liberal, you know.
So did you know that Carlton's family lived in the area?
Which one?
Carlton Armstrong's family
oh,
lived in the area?
Yeah, I didn't really know them at all. But
Arlene had told me that. So you went into education.
Right.
And primarily the classes, I'm assuming, that you took at the university were pretty much education classes, anything
right.
connected with that. And why, explain to me why you chose education.
Okay. Well, as I think back, you know, that was real easy for me because both my parents were teachers. My father was an industrial arts teacher, later high school principal. My mother was a musical ed teacher. And so I guess I had never thought of anything else. When I started at Plaville, I enrolled in secondary English and then decided that maybe I would have more fun at the elementary level. So when I transferred in 62 to the University of Madison, I enrolled in the elementary education program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I got my bachelor's degree. And then my master's and PhD were more in curriculum in general.
Mm-hmm.
But I always enjoyed interacting with the children and coming up with challenging ways to make those little minds work.
Did you ever think of teaching the older grades?
Well, initially I did, and then I went to elementary level, which I really loved, although it's kind of like being on all the time with young children. In fact, I started out at Northside in sixth grade, and then I spent two-thirds of my career at the elementary level at third grade, which is primary, and everybody would always say, which did you like better and which was easier?
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to answer
mm-hmm.
that question, but I always said, well, at the third grade level, you're on all the time. You know, so some people would assume because they're younger, it would be easier to teach, and actually much more preparation involved. You never could just have study periods. So
mm-hmm.
they both would have, their pluses and minuses. But I had the opportunity actually to teach adults, because during my, when I was working on my PhD, I had to spend one semester on campus. And that year I had a job as a teaching assistant, actually to Ann Becker, my main professor, and then to my minor professor also in two different courses. And that was, to me, it was like thrilling to have adults in the class, because they were all there because they wanted to be, and you know, were great listeners, and they could chat with you at your own level. So I liked that as well. So that when I got to the point when I got my PhD, that was a tremendously difficult decision, because I think my professor assumed that I would go on into college teaching, and I elected to go actually back to Sun Prairie and continued and finished my career in the public schools. So.
What was the reason you chose that instead of continuing with adults?
Well, I probably, maybe there were too many unknowns for me. I probably would have had to move out of the area. Mm-hmm. If I would have gone to the second or the college level. Mm-hmm. And I just really liked working with kids at the elementary level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the way we went.
It's always exciting with children. If you had not gone into history, into education, what other area of education might you have gone into?
Well, I guess one thing I forgot to mention, that when I was a teacher in Sun Prairie, I also took on a sort of an added job. At that time, they had curriculum coordinators at the elementary level, which is quite unusual. And I was asked to be the social studies coordinator for K through 8 teachers, and that was in addition to all of the classroom teaching. It mainly was to organize the curriculum and to help revise it every so often.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really how I got really interested in the area of history and social studies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that served me well, because I also started affiliating with the State Historical Society and served on an executive board down there for the Council for Local History for many years, and got to know the people down there.
Mm-hmm.
And also became familiar with what's being done statewide in local history. And then I joined the DeForestry Historical Society as a member, and then got on that board, became a treasurer, then the president, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm still the president there, and currently we're in charge of actually 4 sites. We have 2 home museums, a restored depot, and then the beautiful facilities here in this public library of about 1,500 square feet, which is our archival center, and also a huge gallery, which we change every so often, and it's working out beautifully to be working with this great staff here at this site, and everybody that comes to visit, of course, is in awe of what we have and what we do here. So,
let me back up a little bit. You had mentioned that the family vacations, you really, really liked those. So as an adult, I'm assuming you still enjoy vacations.
Right.
But I'm assuming also that they're different. So do you have favorite memories of?
Oh, sure. And that kind of relates to my interest in history. During the 90s, I had the opportunity and the great privilege, I guess, to do quite a bit of travel in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I went for 10 years. And the first year that I went, it was called the Best of Italy, and got to know other teachers that were traveling with this particular teacher / travel agent. And we just had a glorious time in Italy. And that was my first experience actually flying and being away that far away from home, and it was a great trip. And so after that, every summer, I traveled. And I remember the second one was to Scandinavia, the third one was to England and Scotland, where my grandparents come from. And then we did a couple cruises, and my favorite was the Greek island cruise, where we started in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hit all the islands, and we ended up in Istanbul, Turkey, and all those biblical sites and ancient history sites.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think my great interest in history was really sort of crystallized, when you actually visit the sites, as well as the ones in our country, the presidential libraries in Mount Vernon and Colonial Williamsburg, which I still go to every year. So, yeah, actually, you know, I liked history in high school and as an undergrad, but when you actually were in those places, it becomes even more fascinating, and I still have that keen interest. It's just harder for me to take that long plane ride now, so.
So did you take those trips because you wanted to see the historical aspect, or was
that
just...
was mainly it, yeah. It never was, even on the cruises, it was never on the big cruise ships where it's all about playing games and shows and food.
Mm-hmm.
It was mainly that they always, every day you were at a different place,
mm-hmm.
which was a site of historic interest.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the other part isn't enjoyed, but... And the other thing with the cruises, the ships that we were on were never like 3,000, it was like 800. Which was kind of a nice size, worked out really well. So, yeah, I have a lot of great memories because I have a lot of notebooks and photographs from those years. So.
I bet that's fun to go through.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, just last night I was looking through the one on Scandinavia up in Norway. It was interesting because so many people from this area, you know, emigrated from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun to be in all those fjords, and I'd forgotten this, but we were there the year before the Summer Olympics were held in Norway, so I'd forgotten until I reread it. So
that's terrific. It's nice that you have a lot of pictures and other things.
Type thing. I always think it's kind of boring to other people, but it sure brings back the memories when you go through it, you know. So.
No, that's great, and I think a lot of people might be interested to see that.
Oh, sure.
So perhaps one day you could do a program for the library.
If we ever get, yeah. I've had a goal the last 5 winters to do something with the computer or PowerPoint on the Historical Society, because
mm-hmm.
we have an old slide tape.
Mm-hmm.
But you know how that is. Just like I've been planning to do with my family history, too, get that into the computer, but maybe someday.
So you've started a family history.
Well, I have all of the data, and I have it actually entered into the Family Tree Maker, but now there's so much work to do.
Sure.
To fill in the spots and try to get encourage relatives to share dates and names. And
so you were the one that started that in the family, somebody else?
I didn't really
didn't.
Start it, but it was done sporadically by different people.
Sure.
Over the year. But in the Historical Society now, we have a growing collection of family histories, and when I look at some of those that are done in such unbelievable detail, I mean, I'm just in awe of, you know, written dialogue and histories of almost every person and photographs, and it's very time consuming,
but it's wonderful to see.
It's fulfilling, yeah, fulfilling,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm envious of that also.
Oh, I am too.
So you mentioned that you're involved with not only the local historical society, but the state historical society.
Mm-hmm.
You're on many committees, and I'm sure that all takes up lots of your time. And one thing I found interesting was you said as administrator in school that you had lots of meetings, which you didn't really care for at the time. but I know with your commitments to the historical society and the library board, and everything else, that you are in lots of meetings now. So has your viewpoint on meetings changed?
Well, I guess, you know, they always say it's different when you don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
All of these committees that I serve on are by choice.
Mm-hmm.
And as an administrator, it was often meetings like all day long that you'd be at administrative meetings while all the work was piling up on your desk, you know, and then you'd
mm-hmm.
come back at 6 and start working on it. So no, I serve on the local library board and have been, I think, for over 30 years and really enjoy that and the people involved with that and the Historical Society. And recently I just became a member of the Dane County Library Board. That's been really fascinating because there you get the perspective of the whole county and what other libraries
mm-hmm.
are doing and
mm-hmm.
and learn about the politics involved at the county level as well as at the local and,
mm-hmm.
and state level.
Mm-hmm.
And I served on local council for history as an adjunct of the state for many, many years. I'm not involved in that anymore, but that used to be very time consuming but very worthwhile, and there were two times a year we met, one time in Madison and then one time in the middle of the state. So that was quite a commitment, but got to know a lot of people involved with that. Right now I'm also on the DeForest Area Foundation Board, and that's several other people in the community that are very much committed to encouraging people to request grant money for very worthwhile community efforts, and so that's very, I think, worthwhile and very gratifying, too. And I'm also very involved in my local church. I'm not on any boards right now, but I on the music committee, and I play the organ, so that's kind of a nice release.
And which church is that?
In Morrisonville, the United in Christ Lutheran.
Okay. So pretty much history is your life at this point. You're always involved with a lot. Can you give us a little bit of history of the Historical Society in the DeForest area?
Sure.
The first building it had was...
Sure.
I have no idea.
Well, it all began, actually, before I was involved in the 1970s with a small group, of a local group, and Clara Mulvey was one of those, and the other one was Rolf Ethan, who is a friend of mine, actually, from... He was in school with me in DeForest. They began in the homes, and they got incorporated and began collecting things. And very soon, of course, they didn't really have a home for their society. So a building on East Elm Street was donated to them by the Ethan family with a caveat that they would have to prove their viability. They gave them 5 years. And after 5 years, they were even more active, so they were deeded that building. It was, we call it the Hanson Newell Bennett House. And for over 2 decades, everything was there, the offices and different rooms. There were different displays, and that's where they met monthly and so on. Then in about the late 90s, the place was just packed, every corner with artifacts and things, every closet, every cabinet. So we had made plans to actually add on, and we're going to build a carriage house in the backyard as an archival center. And it actually was even designed by a student at the college here at the MATC. And then we were approached by somebody involved with the plans for the beautiful new library that was going to be built with a question, have you ever thought about locating, you know, part of what you do at that setting, because it's the same patrons from the school district, and it would be like a perfect match. Well, we studied that. In fact, I still have the chart of the pros and cons, and they practically were all pro. Our other building was off the beaten path, and this would be perfect because we knew the gallery where we show things of interest to people would be able to be open during library hours. And before, we were only open about 3 hours a month. So we elected to do that, and it's been a great success story. We have a great partnership with the library staff and with all of the people who work in the library. But then ironically, even though we're a very small volunteer group, at about the same time we were approached by the Downtown Redevelopment Authority, who had another building they wanted to give to us, and it was the Adeline Lister House. They had to move it because it was in the area that they were reorganizing. And although we didn't need another building, we didn't need more work to do, we took it on, and originally we were going to have it in the backyard of the other museum. Mm-hmm. But then somebody in our group convinced Fred Chase, who was the former owner of Chase Lumber, to give land along the railroad where this Lister House could be moved. It was in a perfect location right downtown. And we got the land, Chase gave it to us, and on it was the vintage railroad depot of DeForest, built in 1872, in very bad shape, but the roof was good. It was used as storage all these years since the service was phased out in the 70s. So now we had four buildings all of a sudden. And the goal was never to do anything with the depot except just to keep the roof on it so that, you know, to keep it intact. But then in the last 2 or 3 years, we received a huge grant from the local bank and a very fine estate gift from another family. So that's our latest one of our latest achievements is we just restored the Vintage Depot to its 1930s. And then the other positive thing about the Lister House was that the Chamber of Commerce, the DeForest Chamber of Commerce, asked if they could have their offices there. And so that's been another great partnership. And we just spent a lot of money just this last year in making that more energy efficient, put on a new roof and new insulation. So right now I can say we're really good, well set with all of our buildings. We just need a few more volunteer people to help us keep up the lawns, the flowers, and all of that. So
with the addition of the buildings, did that make it easier to get more membership, more volunteers for the society?
I don't know about our membership. It kind of depends on how you define membership. We have quite a large mailing list. The number of people that actually send in news is not huge, but they're very, very faithful. But what we found is a very large group of people that support us, who support our mission. And that's where we've gotten a very large financial backing also. Mm-hmm. And we're happy to say now that we have volunteers who are here at the library every Tuesday and Thursday. And the number of people that give us things, we can hardly keep up with it. And then also the number of people that come requesting things. Mm-hmm. Just this week I was here alone because all of our rest of our people were on a trip to Old World, Wisconsin. But we had a gal come in actually from Ashland looking for information on a great ancestor from the 1840s of all things. I didn't think we had anything that would help her, but we gave her all of our books on our cemeteries and all of our obituaries, and she went off and spent about an hour and a half, and it was very gratifying, you know, when people come and we can help them.
So she found something.
She did, absolutely.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah.
That's terrific.
So sometimes we forget how much we have, you know. So.
Well, that's terrific.
And of course, the thing that's always interesting about that is that it's all volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
all done through volunteers. So
mm-hmm.
we're very fortunate in that respect.
You provide a great service for everybody.
It does, yeah.
And your historical society, the DeForest Area Historical Society, has a relationship with other area historical societies in the state?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some kind of relationship.
We do. One way we do is through the Dane County Historical Society, because they're very different. They're located in Madison, out in a park, but they don't have like a museum. Their archives are just Dane County manuscripts.
Mm-hmm.
But they try to, every so often they have a meeting that will, and they'll invite all of the local historical societies from Dane County, and we were happy to host that here a while back here in this beautiful facility. And then also we're affiliated with the State Historical Society,
mm-hmm.
and that's mainly for help. We can call them and get advice and help. Nothing financial in terms of support. Everybody thinks we get that, but we really don't. But they're wonderful people there, and they have regional meetings so we can attend,
mm-hmm.
and also workshops,
mm-hmm.
and that type of thing, which are excellent. So.
And you have partnerships with the school district?
We do.
Community
we
center?
Always, partnership is real big to us right here. You know, we have the wonderful one with the library staff, definitely with the school district, and I often say also with the Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what we do
mm-hmm.
is interrelated, and isn't it often interesting when we go to organizational meetings how many of the same people you
mm-hmm.
see? And I would add to that the senior center and
yes.
community center.
Yes.
In this community, nobody's competing with each other. Everybody is working, I think,
mm-hmm.
with each other, and that helps so much.
Because
mm-hmm. we don't duplicate then, but also I think have a sense for the needs of the community.
Yes, I think that's great. That's great. Getting back to the railroad, because I know that a great deal of time and effort was put into the beautiful DeForest one, and there's a railroad that runs past Morrisonville through DeForest to Windsor. And each one of those had a depot at one point?
Yeah, I think, and as we mentioned before, that Windsor, DeForest, and Morrisonville, then going to the north, there was also a depot in Arlington, Poinette, and Portage.
Oh.
And that was a very, has become a very historic line from Madison to Portage. Because of its history, and also because some of the cronyism went on to get how to get it paid for way back. It, it's really interesting. So, you know, any depots that were kept for all these years since the when railroad was king back in the 1800s have been important. And that's why the small Morrison Depot is considered more historically significant, actually, than the DeForest one, because it was never changed. But it's in really bad shape. But I'm on that board, too, the Morrisonville Depot Restoration Committee. We hope to be able to move it and have it close to a more accessible highway, and then actually rebuild it. We'll have to rebuild a lot of that. The one in DeForest, much of it was actually still intact, so it was just a matter of restoring it. But that whole history is becoming even more exciting with the news that we may possibly in the future have fast rail through here. I mean, it looks like it's going to be reality from Milwaukee to Madison.
That'd be terrific.
With the ultimate goal of going to the Twin Cities, and if that happens, we know it will come through here.
Mm-hmm.
And well, that would be great if they have a stop in DeForest, because it would probably be at our depot and our chamber, so that would
great.
Be wonderful.
Now tell me about the Windsor Railroad.
Yeah, the Windsor Railroad Depot is still standing. It's just no longer in Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
It was built, we think, maybe even by the same carpenters as the DeForest one, because it has it's very structurally similar. But in the 30s, the railroad service to Windsor was diminished, so that they had just a couple of small buildings down there. And the DeForest area, I think it was the Businessmen's Associations, bought that depot and had it moved to DeForest and put in the lion and the park, the Fireman's Park,
mm-hmm.
where it still stands today. And a lot of people don't know that, but if you look at it, it has all the railroad supporting beams, and but it has logs around the outside. So that's where the Windsor Depot is. And I'm told by a local Windsor person that some of the people in Windsor weren't real happy about that, that they lost that depot. But I'm so glad it happened, otherwise it would have probably been completely demolished, you know. So
does the Historical Society have anything to do with that one?
No, it's basically would be owned by the Village of DeForest.
Okay.
And it's used now mainly, I think, as a concession stand in conjunction with a lot of the programs that are organized by the library.
And for the 4th of July. And,
yeah. So.
I did find it interesting when I found out that the log cabin, as we refer to it, was originally the Windsor train station. And when I mentioned that to other people, they absolutely do not believe me.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So it would be interesting if they could put a plaque up
it
explaining.
Would.
But
we
maybe
should,
maybe
well, we
some
should
people
do,
wouldn't
you know,
like that.
You know what I should do? I write occasionally write a thing for the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I did quite an article one time on, I think, on the three depots, and may have mentioned that that depot was moved, but wouldn't it be interesting to take a photograph from the same perspective? We have many excellent photographs of that depot, and to run them side by side.
Well, that would be nice.
You know,
because
I forget that people don't know. One of our former board members, David Butler, has even climbed up in that attic over there to see the structure.
Really?
Because he's really into the structure of the DeForest one is called post and beam, the
mm-hmm.
way they build all the barns around
uh-huh,
here.
Uh-huh.
He said that's built the same way.
Oh.
So isn't that something?
That is. That is interesting.
And I think the original siding is probably on it over there. So
it just doesn't look like a depot.
It doesn't until you look at the other one, though, the
mm-hmm.
size
mm-hmm.
and the shape of the roof, the incline of the roof, the pitch, you can kind of tell.
That's interesting. Speaking of your articles for the newspaper, a lot of people just love the articles that you put in because they're so informative and the pictures are terrific. And I know that you have done, I don't have it with me, a book that's in the library system about the history of Morrisonville.
Mm-hmm.
And I had often thought that it would be nice if you could take a collection of your writings for the newspaper and compile them into a book for people.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be a terrific asset, too, to have that.
Yeah.
So
that was suggested to me. One of the things I did when I was doing that a little more regularly than I am right now, was one of all the rural schools in the district, so there was a lot of them. It got to be a little bit maybe tiring for readers because it was always the same when I interviewed, I always tried to interview people from every rural school that remembered their school days from three decades, like the 40s or 30s, 40s, 50s. And so it was often very similar because they all remembered the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was what they brought for their hot lunch, the school picnic, the Christmas program, the strict discipline, but the great fun they had at recess, you know. But it was amazing. They never tired reading of that. And then what we did is we really built our archives when I did that because I called a lot of people and interviewed people, and then we got a lot of photographs, so we have them very well documented. Our school, rural school archives are really, really complete. And it's even kind of inspired some of these school reunions. Two are in process right now, Leeds Township and then Nora Grove School. So people have great memories of their days in the rural schools. And we have quite a few records here too. Schools and a few artifacts, a lot of bells, and that's one thing I guess I forgot to mention. In our main museum, the first floor there has been restored to the 1920s or 1915 to 1920. That's where we take school groups through, and it's really fun because we're showing it before electricity. So we have we put all the lights off and have kerosene lamps, and then we have. Player organs, and we have an Edison phonograph. In the kitchen, we have an ice box, and of course, nothing electric. And there's a pump there for water, and all of the things that you have to crank by hand. You know, the butter churn and all of those. So it's always amazing to children that why people had to spend so much time just keeping that home up, food preparation. So it's a great. It's a great place. But anyway, on the second floor of that building, one of our display rooms is on the school, and there we have sort of a miniature school room, the old school desk. And then we have actually a piece of slate from the old high school as the blackboard and a teacher's desk from the old school. So that's always a huge hit with children. And I also have to laugh because it was would have been in comparison to what they have now in terms of their school environment, it was very regimented and quite strict compared to nowadays. But they learned a lot, though, we think, from listening to the recitations of the other classes. But they must have been very good at being able to tune in and tune out, like most kids are today. We say they multitask. Well, I think kids back then did, too. Just being able to do one thing when they wanted to and tune out other things. So.
That's right, and at the original DeForest High School was on Holum Street.
Right.
Which is now the...
It's the Holum Administrative Center, yeah. In fact, when I mentioned that that first high school was built in 1895, the Windsor Township High School, that was built very close to there. It's right off the road that runs north and south. There is a... I can't think right now. It's not Stevenson, well, maybe it's Washington. But anyway, the first high school was built on the famous knoll. And then in 1924, when they needed more space and more modern school, they built the red brick one, but it was built right next door so that the classes never stopped. The old school was there until the new one was built, and then I think that summer they tore it down. And then in 24, they built that beautiful brick school, which matched, by the way, almost exactly the high school in Sun Prairie. It was the same design.
Interesting.
And then in 1956, ever growing and needing more space, they added on to that high school. Then in 1969, they built the new high school at a different location here in DeForest. And at that time, they kept the 56 portion and they raised the 1924 school with much controversy. I think, you know, they figured that it was too difficult to make that 1924 building efficient, to heat it and so on. But it was still fairly structurally sound, so a lot of people were very opposed to taking that building down. It's so difficult to do that, but there's so many pluses and minuses. But anyway, the 56 portion, the newest portion, that still stands. And that's where all of superintendent's offices are, and I don't know if kindergarten is there, or was it one time?
It wasn't one time, now I believe it's just early childhood.
Okay. And it's always fun to go in back into that school, because that's the school where we did all our senior plays. It's a huge stage, which is now audiovisual or something.
Well, it was a classroom at one point.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And also that huge gym, which in those days was pretty impressive. So.
So when they built that part next to the Windsor High School, did they continue calling it the Windsor High School?
No. That, you mean when they built the 1924 school next to the other one?
Yeah.
Actually, the name had changed before that. That's
oh.
why it's always really confusing to people. I think it was 1917, the year of 1916, 1917, that the name changed to DeForest. Then it became DeForest Union Free. And that was not without its controversy, also.
Yes.
You can imagine.
Yes.
And then it would have been about 7 years after that that the new high school building was built, but it had been called DeForest, you know, about 7 years before that.
Okay.
It always gets people really confused, but
yes.
that's the story
yes.
of the buildings.
Yes, along with DeForest High School, DeForest Area High School.
Oh, yes, that too. And you can imagine the problem we've had in trying to archive this. I finally got to the point where we've got it organized in before consolidation, after consolidation, and then like with the DeForest School, I mean, it was the DeForest Graded School, and then it was the DeForest School, and now they have different names, so it becomes real challenging to try to set up a system.
Now, at the Holum Center, the old high school,
right.
There's a bell out front. Is that from one of the schools, is that correct?
Yeah, that was, I think, from the Windsor Township School.
Okay.
And our historical study, in Claire Mulvey, by the way, were involved in that. I helped to sort of design that. It has the old bell in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that that's what that is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it's real interesting in the old red brick school had a small but very neat stage there. In fact, my mother did quite a few musicals there. We have part of the stage curtain from that
really?
In our archives.
Okay.
It mainly, it was just like the valance,
mm-hmm.
but it,
mm-hmm.
And recently it was so huge, we didn't know what we were gonna do with it. But we kept the section in the middle that had the gold emblem, and the rest of it was taken, and one of our seamstresses made curtains, which are in the Hanson House now, hanging between the parlor and the dining room, because that's the type of thing they did in Victorian times.
Yeah.
Everything was draped and heavy. And it worked out really, really
that's
neat.
Wonderful.
Kind
that's wonderful.
Recycling, as
that's
it were.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's wonderful. Just, I didn't know that. So, when you were talking about the red brick, it just reminded me of the red gym at the university.
Oh, yes.
And as I talk to students up there, and I know how when they enroll now, it's all computerized. And when I tell them when I went to school there how we started at the red gym and then we had to just, you know, make it to each one of the buildings and stand in line and wait to see if our session was still open or not. Do you remember?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, when you asked me about the positives on campus, I have wonderful memories, even more recently appreciated with the architecture of the
mm-hmm.
buildings, like Music Hall,
mm-hmm.
Bascom Hill, which is so historic. You know, it originally had a thing that was lost to fire up there, a dome.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Education Building on one side of the hill, which I'm so thrilled about because they're actually restoring that as we speak, and what they're adding to it was, which was what I love, is where they maintain the original architecture. It was, I think, in the original plans, but was never done at that time.
Oh.
And then as you go down, of course, there's Old Science Hall,
mm-hmm.
and then the Red Gym.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when I was there, of course, the Red Gym, they were still having, they had gyms in there and swimming classes and that
mm-hmm.
type of thing. But what you mentioned, that's one of the most negative memories I have of school on
registering.
Campus was the assignment committees, because you'd plan your classes then you'd wait in line on that day to see if there was open or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't get it, it would throw off the whole
uh-huh.
schedule. So I envy so much now, the kids can do it all online
mm-hmm.
and it saves so much time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you'd have to run all over campus.
Over Bascom Hill to the other side to sign up to
Isn't
try
that?
To get another class over there.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could move a lot faster back.
That, yeah, that's one thing I don't cherish too much, that and walking on Bascom Hill in February, but made it through.
But the buildings are lovely. I mean, Red
they
Gym
are.
Is beautiful. The Memorial Union is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
And, you know, I've been to some campuses where they all look the same. I think, like, in Virginia, something they're all red brick and they're all that same time period.
Mm-hmm.
I think Madison is so fascinating because it's more eclectic
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
with all the different
mm-hmm.
beautiful architecture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not sorry to see the Humanities Building go, by the way. That was one of the more recent ones in the 70s.
Yes.
When everything was sort of that fortress.
Yes.
Look, but they've had so many problems with it.
Well, I think they did
it.
From day one.
Yeah.
Yeah, with water and everything, so.
But they'll keep the Albium. It's not the Albium anymore. There was but the Art Center there, which is sort of that architecture, so
mm-hmm.
they'll
mm-hmm.
kind of have a taste of it there.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, yeah. I think a lot about the campus because I've lived in town and I graduated there. My son graduated there. And football is a big thing up there. Did you ever go to any of the football games?
Well, you know, I hate to admit it, but I don't think I ever did as an undergrad. You know, the first time I saw, and isn't that something that they have 3 degrees there and not ever, like, it goes partly, I think, with living at home and so
mm-hmm,
on.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I actually got there to see one was like about 6 years ago with your husband when we were, I know. We were there as volunteers for the Morrisonville Depot Restoration
That's
Committee,
right.
and
right.
we were manning one of the food things.
I remember.
And that was actually the first time game that I'd ever been. I mean, I knew all about it,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and it,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't. Was not in the band in college, so I didn't go. In
mm-hmm.
that from that respect, and then not living on campus, you know, you just don't drive in
right.
as much.
Right. So. I know we've been talking for a while now, but there's still a lot of things that I'm sure we could talk about, and we'll have another opportunity to do that. Is there anything you'd like to bring in right now before we...
No, I think just in talking about classes on campus, I think I forgot to mention how fortunate I feel that I was able to get an undergraduate education at the cost that I did. Living at home, I can remember back when tuition was less than $100.
Mm-hmm.
And books, although they seemed expensive at that time, were nothing compared to what it was
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was an undergrad, finances were a real challenge for my family because my father had had a stroke, my mother was not working, and I never realized that at the time, how much of a stretch that was.
Mm-hmm.
And I know now that they did things like cashed in insurance policies, and I was fortunate enough to have an NDA loan. And actually, when I looked through my things, I found this the other night.
Okay, an NDA stands for?
Yeah, it was a National Defense Education Loan. It was a federal loan that you could get as an undergraduate student in education. And you were given the money at that time with a promise that you would pay it back once you were in a viable occupation,
mm-hmm.
but you were able to pay it back at half the amount that you received.
Wow.
And so that was a great thing for me. And then I paid that back like in about the first two years, I think, when I was in teaching. But that along with, you know, I guess leading kind of a simple life and living at home, I was able to get my undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a grad student, once you're working, and all of that was done as classes after school or during the summer,
mm-hmm.
then of course you had more financial
mm-hmm.
ability
and,
to do
and you
it.
Said you found your papers from your loan?
Well, yeah, it's the payment schedules, you know, where you had to pay back all this each month and how much it was and so on. And it looks like I had to pay like about $40 like a month. And then I think I paid it off sooner than I had to. But it seems like such a small amount, doesn't it? But at the time,
it wasn't.
It really helped you make it through, you know? Because now if you hear such challenges for these poor students that are working two jobs
mm-hmm.
on campus,
mm-hmm.
no family, very little family support, it's
mm-hmm.
really a
mm-hmm.
challenge, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. But it's interesting how things change.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if hopefully, maybe now in the next few more years, students may be able to get a little more money through loans
mm-hmm.
and grants that
mm-hmm.
can help them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Terrific. Like I said, I've enjoyed this chat, and there are lots more things we can talk about. But I've taken up quite a bit of your time today already, and just to let you know, it has been recording. So.
Oh, well, good.
So thank you for your time today, John, and we'll do a follow-up on Monday.
Okay, good. It's
okay.
been a great pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.